Seekers, Mike Malloy here. Thank you, Brad. Thank you, Brad Friedman, for sitting in last week for two nights. I appreciate it very much. I understand he had an ass-kicking show, too. Hey, listen, let me just get this out of my system real quick because, you know, I really don't care too much about sports. But watching today, Molly and I watched the three overtimes as Michigan State kicked Georgia's ass, and it was a terrible, terrible situation. My little seven-year-old, I'm going to write to the athletic department of the University of Georgia, just up the road here, a few clicks, and tell them they got to get rid of Mark Richt, the coach. I'm sitting there with a seven-year-old kid who wants to understand football, and I'm reluctant to teach her, explain these ridiculous rules. But I decided, okay, let's do it. Because at the time, the score was Georgia 16 to zip. And it was a terrible moment for a seven-year-old. It was a terrible moment. Molly said, well, who are we cheering for? And I said, well, University of Georgia. Oh, the Bulldogs. That's right, sweetie, the Bulldogs. And what happened next over the next couple of hours was just, I'm ashamed that I exposed my daughter to University of Georgia's rancid, rotten, horrible playing. But congratulations to Oregon. Enough said. Yeah, Oregon won. I don't know where to begin with this tonight. I really don't. We have a couple of treats for you tonight. I have a Bob Alexander sent me a couple of things. One is a compendium of old Mike Malloy Radio Gumshoe programs who go back to the 20s. I've been in radio for a long time. This goes back to the 1920s. He put together, I don't know how he got them. He went to some archive, and he got excerpts from over the past six decades, seven decades, eight decades, actually, and put together kind of a synopsis of Mike Malloy Radio Gumshoe, which we're going to play later on tonight. I'm going to have to, because at some point in tonight's programming, I'm going to have to take a break and go get a stiff drink, I'm sure. But I digress. Also from Bruce Enberg, Prairie 2, we have a report. And also have something from our education correspondent, Kate Petrini. This is not end-of-the-year stuff. We you know, we don't do that here. But I just don't know how to get into what happened. Well, most Americans were partying New Year's Eve, December 31st. Kathy and I didn't go anyplace because it's really amateur night. You get on the road or party, you're kind of taking your life in your hands. So we had a party for seven-year-old kids.
We took our life in our hands.
What?
Well, we did end up taking our life in our hands.
Yeah, we did take our life in our hands. That's right. We had a party for a bunch of Molly's seven-year-old friends. And so I was otherwise distracted, helping to organize little events for the kids and screaming at them. Well, I did. A couple of times I had to. I had to just shriek at the little darlings. But at some point during that party, Barack Obama ended justice in this country, totally destroyed the U.S. Constitution, and has now identified himself right up there with every single fascist, going all the way back to Mussolini. And as Bob Alexander points out in the missive he sent me tonight, and I'll get to a little bit later, anyone who still considers voting for Barack Obama, you're just voting. I don't know what the hell you're voting for, but you are determining that you want fascism. Now, the Republicans have offered nothing either. I mean, they all are. But any of you who still see any difference whatsoever between Dick Cheney and Barack Obama, you're a goddamn fool. I'm just going to come right out and say it. That's how I feel. And I know that's going to piss a lot of you off. I don't care anymore. I don't care. After what happened, after what Barack Obama signed. So anyway, I'm flipping around through some channels tonight, trying to get back in the groove of these filthy topics that are swirling around. And ABC, NBC, no, not even a mention of it. I don't know what happened on the Sunday talk shows because we went ice skating on Sunday. I can't watch that stuff. So tonight, right before airtime, I'm flipping around and I look at all these well-known liberal commentators on MSNBC. And as far as I could tell, I didn't watch all the programming. All the way through, all they're talking about is this goddamn ridiculous sideshow in Iowa that means nothing. It has no meaning whatsoever. And the way media in this country have focused on this is disgusting and contemptible. But the liberals on MSNBC, that's all they can talk about. Not a mention. Maybe I missed it. Maybe somebody will send me an email and say, oh, yeah, well, you know, what's his name said it and what's her name said it and you just missed it, Malloy. Okay, maybe so. But as far as I know, and that's, I know what I know. What I don't know, I know. I know I don't know. By signing into law, the National Defense Authorization Act, is that what it's referred to, NDAA? By signing that into law, Barack Obama has given the military extraordinary powers to detain U.S. citizens without trial. Do you understand that? If you are a Democrat and you understand that sentence, then go get your Democratic Party registration card if you have one and burn the goddamn thing. Do you understand what happened New Year's Eve? Do you get it? Nah. 90% of the liberals I talk to don't have a clue. I'm serious. The ones who identify themselves as liberal Democrats or progressive, oh, Malloy, you know, get your head out of your ass. You know, he's got to do certain things. Don't worry about it. You know, yeah, yeah, yeah. This is unbelievable. Now, I got to quote extensively from Jonathan Turley. You know Jonathan Turley. From his blog today. Law professor, constitutional scholar, a real one, not like Barack Obama, who uses the Constitution apparently the same way George W. Bush did. But Jonathan Turley says, Barack Obama rang in the new year by signing the NDAA law with its provision allowing him to indefinitely detain citizens. It was a symbolic moment, to say the least. With Americans distracted with drinking and celebrating, Obama signed one of the greatest rollbacks of civil liberties in the history of our country, and citizens partied in unwitting bliss into the new year. Wow. Really? Ironically, Turley adds, in addition to breaking his promise not to sign the law, Obama broke his promise on signing statements and attached a signing statement that he really does not want to detain citizens indefinitely. But what? The Congress is making him? More when we come back.
radio?
It for over a year to make sure I wasn't progressing to full-blown.
Are you ready for radical talk radio?
Fortunately,
it's Mike Malloy.
Oh, that's all right. 21 past the hour. Jonathan Turley again, talking about Barack Obama's role in ending American liberty, and pretty much for good. I mean, we can continue to kid ourselves here, but, you know, if you want to do that, go ahead. Obama insisted, Turley writes, that he signed the bill simply to keep funding for the troops. Right. So he's a liar. A blatant liar, in addition to being an incipient fascist. Obama, that's what I'm talking about. Jonathan Turley, the constitutional law professor, writes, it was a continuation of the dishonest treatment of the issue by the White House, by Obama, since the law first came to light. As Turley wrote earlier, that the White House told citizens, Obama told citizens, that the president would not sign the NDAA because of that provision, taking away every constitutional protection against detention that exists in the Constitution. I realize that's a redundant sentence, but at this point, I don't care. Now, that spin... the president's not going to sign it because, you know, it has that thing in there about arresting and detaining American citizens without due process. So, the president won't sign that. Well, that spin ended, Turley writes, after Senator Carl Levin, Democrat of Michigan, went to the floor and discussed it. It was the White House itself, Obama, that insisted that there be no exception for citizens in the indefinite detention provision. Do you understand that? A direct demand from the President of the United States. Let's not call him the White House. He's a goddamn person. He's not a building. Obama insisted that the provision allowing indefinite detention without charge of American citizens be left in the bill. Do you understand that? Even Bush didn't have balls that big. Do you understand that? And the latest claim is even more insulting, that he had to do this to, support the troops, make sure the troops got taken care of. I'm just trying to keep funding the troops, Obama said. As Turley points out, that claim is even more insulting. You do not support the troops by denying the principles for which they are allegedly fighting. Of course, they are not fighting and haven't been fighting for freedom and justice for decades. They've been fighting for corporate America, i.e. capitalism, which contravenes freedom and justice the American way every chance it gets, which is 100% of the time. So there's lies in everything that's said. There's deception. And now this. But as Turley points out, let's give them the mythology that they're fighting for truth, justice, mom, apple pie, and the American way. They are not fighting to consolidate authoritarian powers in the president. Or at least, they're not supposed to be. Are they? Well, guess what? As Turley points out, the so-called American way of life is defined by our Constitution and specifically the Bill of Rights. Moreover, the insistence that you do not intend to use authoritarian power does not alter the fact that you just signed an authoritarian measure. It is not the use, but the right to use such power that defines authoritarian systems. And who signed this? Reagan? No. Pappy Bush? No. Nixon? Nope. George W.? Nope. Barack Obama. And you know what? There are people out there who define themselves as Democrats or progressives or liberals who are going to vote for this man come this November. They are. They're just, well, you know, he signed a signing statement. Well, you know, he had to fund the troops. Well, you know, what about the Supreme Court? Right? And they'll scream that at you the way I just did. And that will be their reason for voting for the fascist Barack Obama this November. There's more. Stick around unless you've had enough and you've decided that I'm either off my goddamn nut or have become a right winger. Whatever you decide. I hope you come back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. Yeah, I know. I should probably calm down. Getting that berserk simply because a Democratic president of the United States once again has shown himself to be a liar and an incipient, not all that incipient, fascist, has signed a so-called National Defense Authorization Act that has removed, and challenge me on this. Go ahead. It's removed the Constitution as the defining document about who we are. And especially the first 10 amendments to that Constitution. So here we are. Jonathan Turley again. He writes, there are those also who continue the longstanding effort to excuse Obama's horrific record on civil liberties by blaming either others or the times. One successful myth is that there is an exception in this bill for citizens. The White House, that would be Obama, is saying that changes to the law made it unnecessary to veto this legislation. That spin is ridiculous. The changes were the inclusion of some meaningless rhetoric after key amendments protecting citizens were deleted. The provision merely states that nothing in the provisions could be construed to alter Americans' legal rights, since the Senate clearly views citizens as not just subject to indefinite detention, but even to execution without a trial. The change offers nothing but rhetoric to hide the harsh reality. Do you understand that now, truth seeker? I want you to get this in your head. I want you to understand. Now, you right-wing bastards, go away. Go watch football. Go watch something. Get out of here. I'm talking to the remnants of the Democrats, the liberals, the Obama supporters. you're really going to vote for this guy? If George Bush would have done this, you Democrats and liberals and progressives would have been frothing and foaming at the mouth. You would have been screaming your guts out. What are you doing about this? Turley goes on, Obama could have refused to sign the bill, and the Congress would have rushed to fund the troops. Instead, as confirmed by Senator Carl Levin, the White House conducted a misinformation campaign, not the White House, Barack Obama, conducted a misinformation campaign to secure this power while portraying the president as some type of reluctant absolute ruler, or as Obama maintains, a reluctant president with dictatorial powers. Ooh, I don't want these powers. Where do I sign for them? Ooh, I don't want to do this. Where do I sign? God damn it, quick. Turley concludes by saying most Democratic members joined their Republican colleagues in voting for this un-American measure. Some Montana citizens are moving to force the removal of these members, who they insist betrayed their oaths of office and their constituents. Most citizens, however, are continuing to treat the matter as a distraction from the holiday cheer. For civil libertarians, the NDAA is our Mayan moment. 2012 is when the nation embraced authoritarian powers with little more than a pause between rounds of drinks. Jonathan Turley writing at his blog site. And let's follow that up. I may have to do this in two parts. From Bob Alexander. Hey, Mike, from now on, our biggest mistake is believing we are free. On December 17th, 2007, Senator Christopher Dodd spoke on the Senate floor against George W. Bush's warrantless eavesdropping and telecom company amnesty compromise. Dodd said this, quote, clear, first-hand whistleblower documentary evidence states that for years on end, every email, every text message, and every phone call, hundreds of millions of private domestic communications have been copied in their entirety by AT&T and knowingly diverted wholesale into a secret room controlled exclusively by the National Security Agency. End quote. Senator, at the time, Barack Obama, announced he supported the amnesty compromise. He supported Bush, saying, quote, so I support the compromise, but do so with a firm pledge that as president, I will carefully monitor the program, review the report by the inspectors general, and work with the Congress to take any additional steps I deem necessary to protect the lives and the liberty of the American people, end quote, Barack Obama. 4 years ago. Bob writes, I didn't want George W. Bush, Barack Obama, or any future president of the United States to, quote, carefully monitor the program, end quote. I wanted a president who would stop the wiretapping program, restore the Fourth Amendment, and protect the Constitution of the United States. That's his goddamn job! But that's not the president I got for Christmas in 2008. The eavesdropping on every call, text, fax, or email hasn't stopped. It's just being carefully monitored. Fast forward to December 31st, 2011. When reader-supported news editor Mark Ash wrote, quote, President Obama today signed the highly controversial defense spending bill, the National Defense Authorization Act, with its so-called homeland battlefield provisions, which allows, according to many legal scholars, the indefinite detention of U.S. citizens by the U.S. military. What is most striking is a lengthy signing statement by Obama in which he maintains his reservations about the homeland battlefield provision, saying, I've signed this bill despite having serious reservations with certain provisions that regulate the detention, interrogation, and prosecution of suspected terrorists. His defense, Mark Ash went on, of civil liberties in the signing statement was passionate. Nonetheless, at the same moment. He signed it! End quote, more or less. Bob Alexander. So, as of now, anyone, anywhere, can be detained indefinitely by order of the President of the United States. Obama said, quote, I want to clarify that my administration will not authorize the indefinite military detention without trial of American citizens, end quote. But what he just signed says he can. We just have to trust him. And all future presidents from now on. Florida Democratic Representative Debbie Wasserman Schultz says she'll be working with other Democrats to repeal the Homeland Battlefield provisions as soon as Congress reconvenes. Good luck with that one. What are the chances a Republican-controlled House will repeal provisions it had already passed in a vote of 283 to 136? If the provisions are not repealed, or if the president changes his mind and decides to use the law he signed, then any of us could end up like Al Jazeera journalist Sami Alhaj. He was arrested in Pakistan on December 15, 2001, and detained at Guantanamo for over 6 years. According to documents published by WikiLeaks, the government, our government, wanted Alhaj, quote, to provide information on the Al Jazeera News Network's training program, telecommunications equipment, and news gathering operations, end quote. He was beaten, sexually assaulted, and on May 1st, 2008, released without charge. We are all now officially small prey animals. We have the same rights a field mouse has against a hawk. Prey animals can't get a lawyer or a trial. Prey animals get eaten. So let's kick off the new year with what we know about the late, great United States. Well, war criminals are immune from prosecution. The president to declare martial law by deciding a public emergency, and this public emergency can be anything he says it is. The president can scoop up U.S. citizens and detain them forever if he wants to, because habeas corpus is now a memory. This government doesn't mind backsliding into slavery. One of Project Censored's top stories from 2008 was about how our government used slave labor to build the U.S. Embassy in Iraq. Quote, thousands of citizens from countries that banned travel or work in Iraq were tricked and smuggled into brutal and inhumane labor camps and subjected to months of forced servitude, all in the middle of the U.S.-controlled green zone. End quote. The borders are closing. Or in some cases, have already closed. More from Bob when we come back.
Each time you listen to right-wing radio, God kills a kitten.
10 before the hour, finishing from Bob Alexander, writing on the National Defense Authorization Act that Barack Obama signed New Year's Eve. That was his New Year's gift to everybody, turning this country into, for all intents and purposes, a fascist state, just waiting for the person, the president, who's going to use this power. It's there. You cannot undo it. No, you can't. From the Code Pink website, Bob writes, quote, in October 2007, Anne Wright, retired U.S. Army colonel and former diplomat who quit in opposition to the Iraq War, and Medea Benjamin, co-founder of Code Pink, were on their way to Toronto at the invitation of the Toronto Stop the War Coalition, but were denied entry into Canada. The border was closed to them. Our email and phone conversations are monitored by the government, Bob writes. Is my phone tapped? Is yours? We don't know. Was this email read by some government stooge? We don't know. How many U.S. citizens will disappear? We don't know. Somebody goes out for a loaf of bread and a pack of cigarettes tonight and then poof, vanishes. Did he run away from his life or is she in a secret prison somewhere? We'll never know. How bad is it? How bad could it get? When is it too late? What exactly are we waiting for? What incident, what sign, what great shocking event has to happen to make us realize the American dream is over, dead, and done with? Naomi Wolf, author of The End of America, has said that she will stop speaking out when someone she knows has disappeared. I suppose it is a natural delusion to think that someone else will be disappeared first. I guess Miss Wolf believes that people are renditioned in alphabetical order. I did not expect Barack Obama to be this nation's savior. But I did not think he could turn out to be as bad or worse than George W. Bush and Dick Cheney. In 2008, Obama gave us the audacity of hope. Less than 4 years later, the only hope we have is the desperate hope that it's not as bad as it seems. The president wants us to believe what he says, not what he signed into law. On December 31st, 2011, 2 days ago, the so-called lesser of two evils argument finally, completely, and utterly collapsed. Any liberal who tries to put a positive spin on this steaming pile is as delusional or corrupt as the right-wing lunatic gas bags on Fox. By signing this perversion, constitutional professor Barack Obama has put himself above the Constitution. From now on, the President of the United States is a king. We have to depend upon his noblesse oblige to keep us out of the gulag. Jesus Christ, I'm starting to agree with Sarah, I've lost my goddamn mind, Palin. This hopey-changey thing turned into a Dick Cheney wet dream. And the next time some liberal zombie tells me to vote Democratic because these freaking Republicans are out to destroy the country, I'll subtly disagree by throwing up on his shoes. Regards, Bob. Well, between Jonathan Turley and Bob Alexander, my hope here at the Molloy program is that you will have gotten the point. And if you haven't, then you are either a brain-dead liberal, an unconscious Democrat, or a typical Republican. One of the three. Truth? Okay, I'll give you some more truth. This is very personal truth. Up until the signing of this abrogation of the U.S. Constitution, as a matter of fact, I even said this 6 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, a month ago, I don't know, that I had hope in that our system somehow would cleanse itself. Somehow somebody would reach up and pull the handle and the whole damn thing, all the crap and corruption would get flushed. and that somehow, some way, we would pull back from the brink. Well, here's my signing statement to that. I still have that hope. But what I'm staring at is the same thing you're staring at. Fascism in this country has arrived. It's here. And the person who signed it into law was a Democratic president. The only question that remains, what do we do next? Disgusting to me is this Iowa caucus crap. The only reason it has any merit, and I use that term advisedly whatsoever, is because of the weight assigned to it by our corrupted media. And I mean all of it. I mean all of it. All the media. Especially television. What a bunch of goddamn freaks. All networks. All of them. Yes, including MSNBC. Every single bit of it. Conducting themselves as though this is the most profound and important event facing America. Is which one of these half-witted morons are going to get a bunch of religious right freaks? Choose them. In various living rooms around Iowa tomorrow night. I will not cover the goddamn thing one bit. If you want to know who wins this pig show tomorrow night, switch over. Oh, I don't know. Pick one. But I'm not even going to mention it. Astonishing. Right now, on Lawrence O'Donnell's MSNBC, there they all are. Oh, my God. David Gregory. And who else is on? Oh, yeah, who the former head of the Fed, his wife, who is the commentator for MSNBC. What the hell is her name? I don't care. It doesn't really matter. But there they sit, pontificating. Lawrence O'Donnell, you should have your ass kicked. You really should. You know what's going on in this country. And you're devoting one little bit of time with that crap-eating grin on your face about this disgusting event tomorrow night. Oh, my God. I guess it really doesn't matter, does it? Nah. It you for this. Somebody sent me an email. Who am I supposed to vote for now? You know what my answer is? Nobody. It doesn't matter. Are you kidding? What? Who do you want to vote for? Do you want to invoke? You want to vote for the resident who has declared this country to be a fascist state? Or do you want to vote for one of these religious right sick individuals who represent the so-called silent? This is madness. This is just madness, Kathy. What the hell are we doing here? A couple of emails from Bruce. Here's one from Bruce regarding Obama. Good New Year to you and all. We should be so lucky. It was about 80 years ago a young chancellor was given total power. It was not by force of arms or actual necessity. It was handed over by the Bundesstaat, which, much like our patently useless Congress, needed someone to make the hard decisions. Except for some good roads and a cute car, things did not turn out too good for the Germans. But the ends justified the means. The rich did indeed get richer. Bruce. From Roz, who writes, Mike, I got this from a friend of mine. I must say I have to agree with her. Roz, here's what Roz sent me from her friend. Boy, it's quite shocking that the USA is now a police state. They used to brag that they were the best ever. They certainly came down with a thud. I bet no one in the world would wish to be American now. The timing is interesting. I think they know that things are going to get a lot worse. So they're setting up the logistics to be ready for something big, like reducing welfare and assistance to the older people. That will bring social chaos for sure. The checks will be reduced to penury levels because of the big deficit they owe. Something along those lines, just my guess. I just can't stop thinking that it is a judgment of some sort. The American public are oblivious to all the blood and gore that their government is responsible for and are perfectly all right with it. They are comfortably numb watching American Idol and similar shows on television. The ones who that do know are heading for the hills. Or leaving the country. And on a tangential subject from Valerie in San Francisco, Mike, I'm currently streaming you for what may be the last time on Green 960, since the fascist pigs who own this station now decided balanced included an unbalanced individual like Glenn Beck and Rush Limbaugh. I will hijack my son's iPod and make him show me how to use it. I would rather you get the money anyway than satellite radio. Well, there's nothing wrong with satellite radio, Valerie. Although I wrote to both Green 960 and Clear Channel, it looks like it was to no avail. Do they think that this will keep people in San Francisco from getting the information we need and love? They are stupider than we gave them credit for. Good luck to you and Kathy and Molly. I will stay in touch as often as I can. Glenn Beck on Green 960. Jesus H. Screaming Christ. And then, of course, Naomi Wolf, her blog. She maintains that with Congress passing this, she wrote this back on a month ago. Well, 3 weeks ago. Regarding the Senate's overwhelming passage of the Homeland Battlefield Bill. This was before Obama signed it. And she says, I just have to quote some of this for you. She says, I never thought I would have to write this, but incredibly, the U.S. Congress has now passed the National Defense Appropriations Act with Amendment 1031, which allows for the military detention of American citizens. The amendment is so loosely worded that any American citizen could be held without due process. The language of this bill can be read to assure Americans that they can challenge their detention, but most people do not realize what this means. At Guantanamo and in other military prisons, one's lawyer's calls are monitored, witnesses for one's defense are not allowed to testify, and one can be forced into nudity and isolation. Incredibly, 93 senators voted to support this bill. And now, most of the House. A roster of names that will live in infamy in the history of our nation and never be expunged from the dark column of the history books. And she goes on to lay out the usual justification, like Congress. And keep in mind that Congress is the 1%. They're not you and me. What was it? I mean, how many articles have to be written about the preponderance of millionaires, tens of millionaires, who now write the laws, for this country? But Naomi Wolf writes here about, do these members of Congress really think that they are immune from this? Do they think that, this won't affect me? And she writes, the moment this bill becomes law, which was 2 days ago, Congress, even though Congress is accustomed in a weak democracy to being the ones who direct and control the military, the power roles will be reversed, and they are now. Congress will no longer be directing and in charge of the military. Rather, the military will be directing and in charge of individual congressional leaders, as well as in charge of everyone else. As any parliamentarian in any society who handed this power over to the military can attest. But we don't, don't worry about it, he promises he'll never use this power. He won't. He won't use the power. We'll be right back. Mitchell, her husband was Alan Greenspan, of course, and there she sits every day, I think, on MSNBC. Jeanette wants me to direct you to a film. It's available online. The film is Lifting the Veil. I know a lot of you already have seen it, familiar with it, but Jeanette wants me to remind you. It's Metanoia Films. Just do a Google on Lifting the Veil and check it out. It's there. It's free. Back to what Naomi Wolf was talking about. Oh, and by the way, next hour, jobs are coming back to America. Yeah. So stick around for that. Anyway, as Naomi Wolf points out, what often happens is the people who pass these laws believe that somehow they are above them. And I can understand how the U.S. Congress would feel that way, because it is so replete with millionaires, people who are worth tens of millions of dollars. A lot of them didn't arrive that way, but they're that way now. And for anybody who honestly believes, or misguidedly believes, whether it's honest or not, that this is going to change, what the hell have you been drinking or smoking or ingesting or shooting into your veins? Are you insane? Do you really think the U.S. Congress is going to vote to end its power? Do you think the President of the United States is going to not sign something that gives him dictator? Oh, wait a minute. I already did that. Huh? Do you really think that there is a way to reform this? Please, tell me how. Tell me how. I would love to get an email from you. How is this to be reversed? Oh, well, Mike, somebody will challenge the detention section of this NDAA in court. Oh, really? How are they going to do that? Once they are arrested, they are disappeared. And they have no rights to petition a court for review. Well, that's habeas corpus. That doesn't exist anymore. So you're going to vote in more Democrats, are you? Is that what you're going to do? Or are you just going to throw in the towel and vote in Republicans? After all, they're God-fearing. We're in a world of crap. Do you know that? Do you understand that, Truth Seeker? There is only one solution. The solution has a couple of different avenues to get there, but there's only one solution, and that is we have to replace the system, the political economic system that has destroyed everything. We need to replace it. Why do I keep feeling, Kathy, that you and I are going to get a knock on the door about 3 o'clock in the morning some night?
I don't think they're going to knock.
You don't think they're going to knock? You think they're just going to come in? Well, the first one will be dead. But up until Obama signed this, I didn't have any down-to-the-bone fear for my country because I felt that, well, somehow we'll pull out of this. Obama will not, even though he has failed over and over and over again. Every goddamn thing he's done since he took office has been a compromise, a failure, a lie. Backpedaling, half-truth, misinformation, misguided, and then to find out that Obama lobbied Carl Levin and said, no, keep in the bill the detention without charge or trial of American citizens. When you find that out, when that has now surfaced, what do you do? Do you watch the rest of the Fiesta Bowl and just say, oh, man, I don't want to hear that crap? Is that what you do? That's what you do? Or do you send me an email that says, but Mike, we have to reelect him. What about the Supreme Court? Is that what you do? Who do you suppose will be the first targets of the NDAA? The Detention Without Charge Act. Who do you think it's going to be? I know a couple of people. And they're not Al-Qaeda. They're not terrorists. They're people who still believe in what our Constitution says. And they will be the first to go. We'll be right back. We have another break. Stay with us.
I tell you again, they would do anything to materialize their every wish. Oh, yeah. They come to the dumb presence. They eat the bread of sorrow.
Show all substance, no abuse.
45 before the hour. Naomi Klein, or I'm sorry, Naomi Wolf goes on to say Mussolini, who created the modern template for fascism, was a duly elected official when he started to direct paramilitary forces against Italian citizens. Yes, he sent the black shirts to beat up journalists, editors, and union leaders. But where did these militarized groups appear most dramatically and terrifyingly, snapping at last the fragile hold of Italian democracy? In the halls of the Italian Parliament. Whom did they physically attack and intimidate? Mussolini's former colleagues in Parliament, as they sat, just as our Congress is doing, peacefully deliberating and debating the laws. Whom did Hitler's brown shirts arrest in the first wave of mass arrests in 1933? Yes, journalists, union leaders, and editors. But they also targeted local and regional political leaders and dragged them off to secret prisons and to torture that the rest of society had turned a blind eye to when it had been directed at the other. Who was most at risk from assassination or arrest and torture after show trials in Stalin's Russia? Yes, journalists, editors, dissidents. But also physically endangered and often arrested by militarized police and tortured or worse were senior members of the Politburo who had fallen out of favor. U.S. members of Congress and senators may think that their power protects them from the treacherous wording of Amendments 1031 and 1032 in the NDAA, but their arrogance is leading them to a blindness that is suicidal. The moment they signed this into law, history shows that they themselves and their staff are the most physically endangered by it. They will immediately become not the masters of the great might of the United States military, but its subjects. And even if history is any guide and every single outcome of ramping up police state powers, unfortunately, that I have warned for years that history points to has come to pass, even then, they will become, sadly but inevitably, its very first targets. Yeah, that is what history dictates, isn't it? Naomi Wolf, writing on her blog about what our great democratic liberal president did on New Year's Eve. Wow. Meanwhile, you know, that's the interstellar firestorm that is hovering in that space between the planets that is your little existence and my little existence, right? Our little worlds. The fact that we now live in a police state by any definition. Yeah, but Mike, it won't be enforced. Then why has it become law? Do we pass laws so that they will not be enforced? Please. It's okay to be naive. In other words, it's okay to be a committed Democrat. It's okay to be blind. In other words, it's okay to be a committed Republican. But just ask yourself this question. When these laws are passed are by tremendous majorities in both houses of Congress and then signed by the President of the United States, does all that happen so that they will not be enforced? Are you serious? But you know what? I know it, and you know it. There are millions of Americans who will watch this chimpanzee show from Iowa tomorrow night. And they'll be cheering the same way Molly and I cheered for the University of Georgia today. And they'll be saying, oh, yeah, all right, go, Mitt, go there, Santorum. Yoo-hoo, Michelle, do it, do it, do it. And there are also people who will get out there, starting in the summer with those yard signs for Barack Obama with the new swastika on it, that little round thing with the furled flag blowing in the breeze, right? And they'll get out there knocking on doors with their little clipboards. Hi, I represent Barack Obama. You know, he brought health care to Americans this past year. You are going to vote for him again.
Well, yes, of course I am.
You know, he killed Bin Laden.
I know. Oh, I'm going to vote for him again.
There was a sentence, an article in the New York Times today that just cracked me up. No pun intended. Here's what it says. An official in Ohio said yesterday that the underground disposal of wastewater from natural gas drilling operations, fracking, would remain halted in the Youngstown, Ohio area until scientists could analyze data from the most recent of a string of earthquakes there. The latest quake, the 11th since mid-March, occurred Saturday afternoon with a magnitude of 4.0. It was the strongest yet. Like the others, it was centered near a well that has been used for the disposal of millions of gallons of brine and other waste liquids produced at natural gas wells, mostly in Pennsylvania. The waste from the process called hydraulic fracturing that is used to unlock the gas from shale rock had been injected under pressure into the well, which is 9,000 feet deep. Scientists had suspected that some of the wastewater might have migrated into deeper rock formations, allowing an ancient fault to slip. Similar links between disposal wells and earthquakes have been suspected in Arkansas and Texas. Oh, God. Right. Hey, man. We got to get to that natural gas because, you know, we got to become energy independent. And from California, a federal judge last Thursday blocked enforcement of a California regulation favoring producers of gasoline, diesel fuel, and biofuels whose methods generate fewer greenhouse gas emissions. The ruling by the judge said that rule passed by the assembly in California unconstitutionally discriminates against out-of-state producers and tries to regulate activities that take place entirely outside state boundaries. By granting this injunction, the judge dealt a blow to the state's much-trumpeted effort to reduce its greenhouse gas emissions to 1990 levels by 2020. So a federal judge says, oh, no, that's outside the Constitution. So, you know, you can't do that. People of California are going to have to keep breathing heavy-duty pollutants while the planet continues to heat up, because to do otherwise would be unconstitutional. Don't you know? Huh? Yeah, it would be.
Malloy.
10 before the hour. I've gotten a couple of emails from people who are confused about the wording of the National Defense Appropriations Act. I keep saying Authorization Act, Appropriations Act, that contains these two sections that now have made it legal to arrest and detain U.S. citizens by the military without charge, without release, hold them indefinitely at the whim of the military. excuse me. And I got an email from someone who was explaining to me where how this is put together, where this idea comes from of posse comitatus, a rule against this sort of thing. And I'll try to get to it tomorrow night because I got something planned for the third hour. But I'm getting confusing emails or emails from people who are confused about the actual wording. There are two sections to the law that to this new law that Obama signed that, in my opinion, are almost directly contradictory, but do allow absolutely. It's very equivocating language, and it's very difficult to for people like you and me to just read it and come to a conclusion. But the people who wrote it, the people who put this idea together, and as my correspondent, whose email I'm going to share with you tomorrow night, put it, this is John Yoo language. You remember John Yoo. He's the one that wrote the memos that authorized torture, who said, in effect, that a president can do whatever a president chooses to do in a time of, quote, war, unquote. Now, what defines war? According to the Constitution, only Congress can declare war. But apparently that's been superseded by the War Powers Act, or whatever the hell it's, I guess it's the War Powers Act, that now gives that authority exclusively to the president, with the caveat that the president has to go to Congress within 30, 60, 90 days, whatever it is, and get permission. Now, what the president usually does is ask for emergency authorization of money to fund that invasion or military operation, and that is construed as permission from the Congress. The point I'm trying to make here is that ambiguous language is used purposefully. It is not used inadvertently. It's not used because the people who write these bills are having a difficulty themselves in saying what they want to say. That's not why ambiguous language is used. It is used so that dumbasses like you and me, well, okay, we're not dumb, ignorant asses like you and me, because we are ignorant, can take a look at this and say, well, but it says here, yeah, but down here, say, yeah, but up here, say, yeah, but over, oh, darn, I don't know. Let's watch the Fiesta Bowl. So to the folks who have written to me these emails tonight or over the weekend when Obama signed this abrogation of the U.S. Constitution, isn't that an act of treason on the part of the Congress, or at least a violation of their oath of office? Are they not impeachable? Is the president not now impeachable? I mean, I don't know, but we don't impeach presidents who are war criminals. We do impeach them if they have a girlfriend and get a little oral sex.
Well, Monica, I don't, you know.
Huh? What? Hello? So to those of you who are confused, that's the intent. So that you will be confused. So that if somebody goes off on a almost incomprehensible rant about this like I have for the past couple of hours, you can send them an email and say, yeah, but Mike or Ralph or Jane or June or Joe or Pete or Mary or Sally or whoever's ranting, yeah, but it says here, you know, I just don't think that it says what you say it says, Mike. I think it, you know, if, well, only, well, maybe it's when you have, you know, to hell with what I've said, when you have a constitutional law professor like Jonathan Turley, when you have another law, constitutional law expert like Naomi Wolf, when you have a writer of gargantuan proportions like Bob Alexander, when all three of these people lay it out very clearly. Who are you going to believe? Are you going to believe Mr. Obama as he apparently signs this into law and yet says, well, now, my fingers are crossed. No, they're not crossed. Just kidding. We'll use it. My legs are crossed. Yeah, right down to my ankles. I'll never use this on, got to go play golf. Hey, listen, I got to sign this because, you know, our troops have to be paid, but I promise.
What about the next guy?
And of course, the next guy? The next president of the United States, if there is one. I used to say that about Bush. I'm saying it now. About Obama. Or the next one. Maybe Obama just wants to finish up and get the hell out of Dodge so he can cash in. I don't know what Obama wants to do. I do know what he has done in his 3 years as president. He completed the work of Dick Cheney. Dick Cheney and George Bush would have, sacrificed their firstborn to have had a law like this.
Maybe they did.
And you never know, maybe they did. Stick around, hour three is coming up. I'm Mike Malloy. Weekend memorable events. Oh boy, this one, or New Year's weekend, whatever. But this one is it's a photograph in last Thursday's New York Times. And it's a picture. At first, I didn't know what it was. A bunch of men dressed in black robes, flailing at each other with long sticks. Inside a building, and they're dressed weirdly, and men in black robes, they're dressed weirdly. Some of them have little funny hats on, and what appear to be cops trying to break them up. And I looked at the picture, I thought, well, those look like Israeli cops. What is this? I read the, you know how that will flash through your mind in about 10 seconds, and or less, first impression of a photograph. So I look at the caption, and what it is, and this is why religion just drives me to the wall sometimes. The scene is the Church of the Nativity in where is it, in Jerusalem or Bethlehem, you know, the alleged birthplace of the baby Jesus. So it's the Church of the Nativity. Now, when you get right down to it, is there a holier place in all of Christendom? I don't think so. The Church of the Nativity in Bethlehem. So I'm looking at this picture, and what it is, this is a picture of Armenian priests, Greek Orthodox priests, and Roman Catholic priests. They're all beating on each other inside the Church of the Nativity in Bethlehem. Look at the picture. You saw this? All right. So here are these three different groups of priests are beating the living, well, Christ out of each other, you know, just hitting and thumping, and the cops are like ducking. And what this is all about, all these different groups of Christians got together, these priests, to clean the Church of the Nativity. And apparently there's a tradition here at the Church of the Nativity in Bethlehem that whatever part of the church you clean, you then have a territorial claim on that part of the church. You clean it, you own it. That's what the caption says. So all these priests and monks get together here to clean it. It's after Christmas, right? And they start beating each other with broomsticks. It's just madness. I mean, is that not a perfect example of religion? You know, of all religion, every single religion. There it is. So here you have these three groups of varying Christians beating the hell out of each other with broomsticks, because they're fighting over who's going to clean what in the Church of the Nativity, because the part you clean, you then have a territorial claim to.
You need to read your website. I actually put a little blog up about that last week.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, you're late.
So you're
late to the party.
You're way ahead. Oh, okay.
Priests beating themselves. You know it's Christmas when priests start beating each other with brooms in Bethlehem. I think that's somewhere in Revelation. It's the end of days. Priests break out the brooms. The moon turns to sackcloth. Frogs rain from the sky. And the priests in Bethlehem beat each other with brooms.
I don't know. Sometimes, you know, you're perusing the newspaper and you look at this stuff and you just can't take it. You have to think to yourself, this is madness. This is total madness. And people wonder why I am so anti-religious. It's a great photograph. Great photograph. I would imagine that possibly. I don't think the Jews would do it, but maybe the Muslims would do it. Take that photograph and just circulate it among their congregants. Say, look, see, look at this. Here's your Christians. The Jews would just kind of turn their backs on it and say, oy. But, you know, maybe the Muslims would go, uh-huh, this is what we're telling you about. And the Hindus, look at this. Of course, only until they have their next internecine riot and start killing each other. Yeah, if all the fighting would just be done with broomsticks. You know, rather than drones and mortars and rocket shells and bulldozers, you know, just do it with broomsticks. Deck the halls with... Well, no, wait, that's not a Christmas carol. Joy to the world! All right, come on. It's time to move on, Malloy. You can save your Christmas cynicism for next year, or your religious cynicism, or whatever. But it is next year. Also, perusing the newspaper at my leisure. This is the thing. You know, when you take a day or two off to celebrate something, I don't know what you do. The first thing I do is turn off everything electronic. I come back 4 days later and turn on the computer and there's, you know, 12, 14, 1600 emails there. But I just turn it all off. I don't answer the cell phone. I'll watch movies. I'll download movies, watch movies, you know, if I'm going to be at home. But I get rid of all the electronic irritants and refuse to participate. I just don't do it. So, reading the paper, which is fun, You know, it's fun to actually hold things in your hand and read them. Newspaper, magazines, you know, catch up on The Nation or The New Yorker or what have you, when you have 3-4 days off. And a newspaper. God, I love newspapers. I was a newspaper boy. Maybe that was it. I don't know. I delivered papers for years. But I love newspapers. So I'm reading The Times. I'm reading, I see this thing in the business section about factory jobs returning to the United States. What? And the first thing I wanted to do was go turn on the computer and get a hold of Bruce Enberg, get a hold of Prairie 2, say, hey, Bruce, guess what? Then I thought, no, you don't turn on the computer on the weekend or when you have time off. So I didn't, but I'm reading this thing, factory jobs gain in the U.S. And then the second part of it, but wages retreat. So I start reading it and find out that manufacturers are hiring again in the United States, in a big country, companies like General Electric. General Electric, without argument, the biggest industrial polluter in the history of capitalism. Now, I know you're going to say, no, that you're going to pick an oil company. Trust me on this. General Electric, the biggest industrial polluter in the history of capitalism, whose CEO, Jeffrey Immelt, took his ass to work for Barack Obama as his as Obama's advisor on how to bring jobs to the American workforce. Now, that's a real challenge. How do you bring jobs to the American workforce? Jeffrey Immelt, who's responsible for the dissolution and disappearance of literally hundreds of thousands, if not millions of jobs. Gone. Kind of like Mitt Romney in Massachusetts with his Bain Capital. Buy companies, fire everybody, sell off the pieces, make money, and then when you run for president, say, oh, I was a job creator. These lying sons of bitches, but I don't want to get into that again. I really don't. But I've got to share with you a little bit from this this piece about jobs coming back to America, but there is a major fly in the ointment. It's a fly so big it's like a goddamn dragon. Jobs returning, the headline says. Factory jobs gain, but wages retreat. So how's this working out? Jobs coming back, manufacturing jobs. GE, the GE is cited, the big Louisville, Kentucky area outside of town. What's it called? They have a name for it. Appliance Park. Appliance Park. It's a complex of factories where GE makes refrigerators And washing machines, dishwashers, other household appliances. They used to employ thousands upon thousands of people there. I think at one time they had almost 20,000 workers. But then the jobs went overseas because capitalism hates labor cost. Hates it. Anything that capitalism can do to destroy labor costs, they will do. The workers are a necessary evil. Replace them with robots, replace them with slaves, try to get them for 10 cents an hour, go to parts of the world where you can get workers for 10 cents an hour, stomp the sons of bitches, don't let them organize, don't let them unionize, don't let them do anything. Profit, profit, greed, greed, capitalism, God damn it, that's all we're into! We hate workers! That's just putting it mildly. You know, Marx said it, workers of the world, unite. All you have to lose are your chains. You think he was kidding? But I digress. So anyway, the Times article talks about global manufacturers. How about that term? Global manufacturers, like, well, pick one. I know, General Electric. And the article says, with labor costs moving down at its appliance factories here in the United States, GE is bringing home the production of water heaters as well as some refrigerators. And in order to do this, bringing the manufacture of these items home, they're expanding their workforce. Ooh. Wow. Slight catch, not real big, depending on where you stand on this issue, but the catch is the wages for the new workers are $10 to $15 per hour less. That's right, $10 to $15 an hour less than the pay scale for hourly employees already working for GE. $10 to $15 an hour less. How could that be? Now, there's another little bump in that road. An additional concession is that the newcomers, the new hires, the new people going to work for General Electric will never catch up to the people who are making, you know, $25, $30 an hour. The new hires will never reach that level. And as the older workers retire or die, they're not going to be replaced by people making the same amount of money. This is the glory of capitalism. This is the beauty of it. This is the wonder of it. What you do, you build a workforce. And because they are unionized, they demand that they be paid a living wage and have benefits like, oh, health insurance, retirement, paid vacations, time and a half for overtime, and they become the most productive workforce on earth because of all that. But you're a capitalist. You don't like this. Wait a minute. I'm only making $10 million a year. That's my take home. Son of a bitch, I should be making $15 million a year. The guy who runs a capitalism rat hole down the road, he makes $15 million. I'm only making $10 million. How do I change that? Well, very simple. Move your factory. God, you're brilliant. Move your factory. Move it to, China, Mexico, where you can pay, instead of paying $21 an hour for a skilled American worker, you can pay 75 cents an hour. And the worker that you hire in country X will do anything to keep the 75 cent an hour job, because without it, the worker is going to be back to eating rocks and mud and starving and, you know, having to kill their own children because they can't afford to raise them. Oh, this is wonderful. Jesus, God, I love being a capitalist. So they do that. They move the factory. The American worker that helped build them into global prominence, screw him. Screw her. Yeah. Kick him to the curb. But there's a catch. There's always a catch.
Make me respect you.
America one flying monkey at a time. Here's Mike Malone.
Before the hour. Okay. Bringing jobs back to America. Manufacturing jobs. God, what a wonderful idea. But GE, on whom the New York Times spotlight shone in this article, GE is bringing workers back, or bringing manufacturing plants back to make water heaters, among other things, in Louisville. At what used to be called the appliance, what was it called? The appliance park. Yeah, huge area industrial park outside of Louisville where GE used to employ thousands upon thousands of workers. Not so much anymore. But the catch, the catch for the American worker, when we're all anticipating, oh, God, jobs are coming back. We're going to be making stoves and refrigerators again. Well, yeah, you are, but you're only going to be working at half the money you were making before we took the job away from you. What? Capitalism is just wonderful. Oh, God, it's a job creator. It's wonderful. Now, how did it come to this? Well, the unions are partly responsible because the unions were just beaten into a bloody pulp thanks to Bill Clinton and George Herbert Walker Bush with the passage of the North America Free Trade Agreement and the further globalization of manufacturing. Keep in mind what Marx said. They globalized production, but they didn't globalize earnings. That makes a big difference. So anyway, capitalism has to survive, even if, as a matter of fact, even when the planet dies, capitalism has to survive right up to the last possible sucking in of air. So wages in China are starting to go up, a natural consequence of all that money. All of a sudden, a half-assed country like China, I'm talking about post-Mao, I'm not talking about its glorious, glorious history, art and sculpture and beheadings and stuff like that. I'm talking about modern China. Backward, but not for too much longer. It's a race to see if China becomes the dominant capitalist society. Well, okay, fascist, but there's not really that much difference. Or becomes the engine of the collapse of civilization as we know it because of all the pollution it is producing. But that's a topic for a different evening, right? So China, with all this money, a natural consequence of that is inflation. And wage inflation happens to be part of that, too. So all of a sudden, the workers in China, you and I don't hear that much about it in this country, but the workers in China are saying, we want more. We want more. We are supposed to be an egalitarian society. Whatever happened to from those according to their ability to those according to their need or something like that, it's gotten lost here in China. So wages are going up. Well, the manufacturers like Jeffrey Immelt and GE and the rest of these huge, wonderful, soul-stirring capitalist organizations take a look. Wait a minute. That's not why we came to China. So the wages are going up. So what to do? Well, don't forget, the one cost that the capitalists cannot, well, they can now, but they always had a problem controlling was the cost of labor, unless there was slavery or serfdom or a feudal system. Slavery was wonderful when it was applied in this country, unless you were a slave, of course. But slavery was great because there was zero labor costs, except what it costs to bury the poor bastards, right? So, the capitalists take a look and they say, well, wages are going up. We have to stop this very quickly. Well, how do we do it? Well, we have to, let's pull some jobs out. Let's close 20 or 30 factories. Oh, that's no big deal. We have 4,000 factories here. Nah, but it'll make an impression. Take them back to the U.S. The U.S.? Well, but that's where they make $21, $25, $30 an hour.
No,
not under Plan B. What's Plan B? We take the factories back.
Yeah.
Everybody is just absolutely thrilled because they're starving to death in the United States now.
Yeah.
We take the factories back. Everybody gets real happy.
Yeah.
And then we tell them the catch. What's the catch? $12 an hour. Well, but they're making $30 an hour.
Of course.
That's why it's called a catch. So the factories are coming back, a few of them. And the shrunken pay scale for newcomers, and I like the way the Times put this, threatens to undo the middle class status of even the best paid blue collar jobs still left in manufacturing. Threatens to undo. A similar contract limits the wages of new hires at a Ford Motor Company stamping plant near to Appliance Park in Louisville, Kentucky. They, the workers at the Ford Motor Company stamping plant, are facing kind of the same thing. But GE's 2,000 hourly workers and Ford's 3,000 hourly workers, nor their unions, nor the mayor of Louisville have objected. Of course not. To the contrary, as the New York Times points out, all argue that job creation must take precedence over holding the line on wages. Holding the line on wages, as if wages were the cause of all this. Isn't that cool, the way they do that? We've got to hold the line on wages and bring jobs back to America, to the United States. We can do this if we can just finally, once and for all, forever, consign union to the garbage heap of history. Union? Collective bargaining? Workers united? Boy, that's communism. Got to get rid of that. And so they're doing it. So the mayor of Louisville, the workers at Ford, the workers at GE, are willing to do this. They, you know, the unemployment rate in Louisville is around 10%. Several thousand people apply for every unfulfilled $13 an hour factory job. $13 an hour factory job. And a 40-hour work week. What is that? Huh? $440 a week. What is that a year? $20,000 a year? What's the poverty level in the United States? 22,000 a year. Mayor Fisher, though, Greg Fisher, he says, hey, listen, the trade-off is absolutely worth it. He argues that while the city is actively subsidizing GE's expansion here, mainly through tax rebates, that's not enough. Remember what capitalism wants, truth seeker, everything. They want your land, your resources, your labor, your children, your life, everything. Everything. That's what capitalism demands. Everything. So, the tax rebates and the low wages aren't quite enough. Mayor Fisher says, you must have a globally competitive wage to create jobs. I thought you had to have demand for a product to create jobs. Oh, that was in the bad old days, 30 years ago. That meme has been completely upended. And now it is, you must have a workforce willing to work for peanuts in order to create jobs. Otherwise, the glorious, paternalistic, loving, kind capitalists won't return. They will stay south for the winter and the summer and the rest of your life. You want them to come back? Agree to work at half or third wages that your parents worked for. Then they'll come back. You know, so as I'm going through this article, my blood starts to, what's your phrase? You know the phrase, your blood doesn't really boil. That would be impossible, wouldn't it? But at least for another 30 or 40 years, then we will see people's blood start to boil as global warming gets to the, well, never mind. That's a different topic too. But as I'm reading this article, I can feel the rage, the anger rising up inside of me. And I'm not in the workforce. I don't give a goddamn anymore. If I were to plan my life a little bit better, I'd be retired by now. But I didn't, so I still work. But I don't have to deal with this. So why is my blood boiling? Why am I getting angry? Why am I enraged? Because it does affect me. It affects me right down to the center of my being to see my country, my neighbors, my comrades being treated like this by this filthy capitalism. And to think of what it was, what the promise was, what the reality was 30, 40, 50, 60 years ago, and to see it like it is now. If your blood doesn't start to boil, take your pulse. You may be dead. See what can happen when you sit around and read when you got a couple of days off. Manufacturing dribbling back into the United States, but at a cost. The cost being about half the wages that these jobs pay to workers who survived all these cuts. Workers who are now making $31 an hour who've been there. They cite the example of one guy who's 62 years old. He's worked for 42 years at Appliance Park, the GE owned and operated capitalist sump hole outside of Louisville, and he makes $31.78 an hour. That's after 42 years of working at Appliance Park. And his name is Mazden. He's 62, and he tries to explain it all. He says the younger workers will get annual raises, you know, 50 cents, 75 cents, 80 cents. And by the time they top out, workers that are starting at $13 an hour, by the time they top out at $18 or $19 an hour, he, Mr. Mazden, and his peers, the oldest of the baby boomers, won't be there any longer to remind them of what they're missing. And, of course, the textbooks will be scrubbed in school as they mostly are now. When's the last time your child came home from elementary school or even high school and said to you, "Hey, you ever heard of Samuel Gompers, Mom? Hey, Dad, do you know who John L. Lewis was?" Yeah. Now, the Times also cites another worker, a woman named Linda. She's 37, and she was one of the first to be hired 6 years ago under this new arrangement. And she says her hourly wage, which is $18 an hour, is almost topped out, although it's $14 an hour less than Mr. Mazden's, but she keeps silent. And she says to a lot of unemployed people, getting her job would take them just enough time to fill an application if she were to protest, because she knows what would happen if she would protest. She says, quote, you don't want to rock the boat. You take a chance on losing everything you have if you do, end quote. Now, what is rocking the boat? Rocking the boat would be talking about unionizing the labor force at Appliance Park outside of Louisville. Oh, God forbid. James P. Campbell, who's the president and CEO of GE's Appliance and Lighting Division, he has a different take. He cites the drop in labor costs here in the U.S. as a crucial reason jobs are coming home. He says, quote, we've gotten to the point where making things in America is as viable as making things any place in the world. He goes on to say, you see, the drop in labor costs, they're significantly less. And then they become a competitive wage with our factories in Sri Lanka or Vietnam or East Appleton or wherever. So we're bringing
East Appleton.
So we're bringing the jobs home. We love America.
In the 1970s, GE employed 17,000 workers in Louisville. By 2005, that number had fallen to 2,000, from 17,000 to 2,000. And at that point, the company began insisting on concessions. Okay, Mr. Mayor, Mr. Union, Mr. Worker, you want the jobs to come back? Now, you got to keep in mind, they're talking to the sons and daughters of the workers who worked there in the 70s. You want the jobs to come back? You want to be able to paint your house? You want to be able to have a house? You want to be able to feed your kids? You want to be able to put clothing on their little backs? Okay, we want concessions. So there's a union there, the IUE-CWA. Union, Local 761, they represent the hourly factory workers, and they agreed to the lower wage scales for new hires back in 2005. And since, the union has ratified that two-tiered system in subsequent contracts. Oh, yeah. The president of Local 761 says, quote, we are getting from the company an $800 million investment in Appliance Park over the next 2 years. And what we had to do for that investment was accept the, quote, competitive wage, end quote. You see, that's what they call it now. That's what the capitalists call it. That's what the globalists call it. That's what the union calls it. Competitive wage. Who are they competing with? Workers in Lima, Ohio? San Diego, Bowling Green, Kentucky, Savannah. Who are these Louisville workers dealing with where it concerns the competitive wage? Oh, that's right. People in Shenzhou, China. People in Hue, Vietnam. People in God knows what, Sri Lanka. That's what the competitive wage is about now. You see, workers of the world unite. The only thing you have to lose are your chains. The only thing you have to lose are your chains. Neither the nation's unions, the Times says, nor the government has tracked the number of jobs downgraded to the equivalent of lower tier wage scale, or the number of people who, like Ms. Thomas, our $18 an hour worker, have gone through. And she said she was laid off in 2005 and then hired back for $12 an hour a few months later. She said, quote, at the time I was very angry about the come down, but then I asked a couple of others who had gone through the same experience how they felt. And they said, you know what, Linda, we're just thankful to have a job, end quote. $12 an hour or $0 an hour, right? I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.